Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to the RotoWire Prospect Podcast. I'm your host, James Anderson. Today, we are going to do our June mailbag episode. We've been doing these every Wednesday, the final Wednesday of every month, I should say. And once again, really appreciate all the thoughtful questions that you guys sent in to me on Twitter this morning. Very much appreciate it. I know it's kind of the dog days of summer, and there'll be no shortage of questions on next month's mailbag episode because that'll be coming directly after a massive update to the top 400 prospect rankings. So before to be sure to check that one out, but really appreciate all the questions you guys sent in this week. I did get some questions about when the prospect rankings are getting updated. I've tried to make this as clear as possible, but there will be a huge update after the draft. It's just kind of, you know, it's kind of impossible for me to do both of those things at once and do a good job on both of those things. So I'm really in the weeds in draft prep mode right now. And then after the draft, probably about a week to 10 days after the draft, there'll be a big update to the prospect rankings, but then there will be basically monthly updates. From there, there'll be a big update at the end of August. There'll be a big update at the end of the regular season. And so that should keep you guys up to date in terms of, you know, who's moving up, who's moving down. I'd also recommend checking out the Prospects Live mock MLB draft tonight that I'm participating in. If you're listening to this on Wednesday, you might be able to still tune into it while it's live. Otherwise, I'm sure they're going to post it up on YouTube after that. But let's get to the questions. Let's get to the mailbag. First question here is from PFBL Dodgers, and he wants to know what I see this what I think the reason is for Nick York's struggles so far this season. He asks if he's still catching up after his injuries. Did we have too high of expectations after last year? So, you know, maybe in hindsight, I ranked him a little bit too high coming into the year, but on the whole, I'm really not concerned at all. I'd recommend following Chris Clegg, who works for Fantrax, but he's also been kind of covering the High A Greenville beat, kind of the Nick York beat almost for Sox prospects. And, you know, the injuries were definitely an issue. I think he dealt with turf toe and, maybe a back issue. But I would be buying low wherever you can on Nick York. I'm still a full believer in him, so I wouldn't expect to see him, fall drastically on the next update. Ryan Wynn Schittle wants to know where Jackson Churio is going to move up on the next update. I think he's basically worth as much to me right now as the number one pick in a first year player draft for next year, which for me is probably Drew Jones. I would be valuing those two similarly. I think that's to me roughly 15th overall on the top 400. I still like Jordan Lawler more if we're just talking about top performing single A hitters. And then Dan wanted to know if Jackson Chourio is getting or if we're concerned about the strikeout rate, 28.7% strikeout rate, 7.4% walk rate at low A. And then he wanted to know just kind of what is the threshold for an acceptable K rate in the lower levels. You know, that would be a concerning strikeout rate for sure if he were, say, a 20-year-old or 21-year-old at low A. But high 20s to me is fine if you're the youngest hitter at a level and you've got a power speed game that Chourio has. And so, you know, the fact that he's still younger than some high schoolers who are going to get taken in this upcoming draft and is doing this much damage at low A, it's not that big of a red flag. I mean, if he were doing all this and the strikeout rate was like 16% or something, then we'd probably be talking about him as top 10, top 8 prospect, something like that. But you know, the guys that have the power speed combo and are doing just a ton of damage and are the youngest players in their league, they get a bit more leeway with the strikeout rate, I think, kind of for obvious reasons there. J-Dub wanted to know what I'm advising with anyone who has Adley in keeper leagues with limited roster spots. I would just be plugging Adley into your active lineup. I mean, if you've also got Will Smith or Dalton Varsho or something in a one catcher league, then maybe trade somebody. But Adley is easily a top 10 catcher rest of season for me. He's been everything he was supposed to be basically over the last few weeks, 2 weeks. I recently traded Adley for Tyler Anderson straight up in a 14-team redraft league with 7-man benches where I'd lost Salvador Perez. So I'm very excited to roster Adley right now in basically any format. I think he's a top, you know, 6 or 7 catcher rest of the season. And he plays a ton, which is great. Patrick wants to know how I'm feeling about Dustin Harris. There was a ton of hype on him last year and he hasn't heard that much this year. I think the reason you haven't heard much is because he's basically doing exactly what anyone should have hoped he'd be doing. He hasn't been any better than expected. He hasn't been any worse than expected. So just kind of, you know, picked up where he left off last year, showing some power, hitting the ball on a line a ton. I mean, I still like Harris a lot. He hasn't ascended into like being a top 20 prospect this year, but that's fine. Stone wants to know if Austin Hendrick and his 40% K rate is scary. Are you still holding on? You know, still holding on is a little strong for a guy that I had ranked 376 on the last update. I mean, that was kind of just a, you know, this guy's pedigree is really good, I don't want to bump him off the list just yet type of ranking, but I'm pretty close to writing Hendrick off as a guy that you need to pay attention to for most dynasty leagues. I mean, the swing and miss is just a massive problem for him. And that was one of the fears when he was drafted. And then Stone also wanted to know if Nick Bitsko was worth a flyer. And then he cited that he's got, you know, bad stats in rookie ball after the shoulder surgery. I was stashing or I was rostering Bitsko as a flyer in a dynasty league. Just, I mean, the upside is off the charts with him after he got cleared to resume pitching. I scooped him up, then I dropped him like after he struggled. But that said, I mean, I noticed his last time out was by far his best outing. So maybe he is, you know, still flyer material. I mean, back in that draft, I liked Bitsko's stuff and upside more even than like Mick Abel. But the, I mean, health issues have just been a big time hindrance to that. But now that he's healthy, pitching, he's coming off his best start. I know when we had Nate Handy on a couple episodes ago, or I think actually I was just texting with Nate Handy, and we were just kind of talking about how a lot of pitching prospects are only as good as their last start, basically. And I think that, you know, that's too simplified, but I do think that's largely something that you should be looking at. Like if you're looking at a pitching prospect, I would not go to a pitching prospect's Fangraphs page and just be like, oh, this is how he's done this year. I would look at his game log, and you can do that on rotowire.com and just look at the game log and see what they've been doing over the last four starts or over the last five starts or whatever. And that'll give you a better sense of things, because these guys are just changing so rapidly, even in season. So I think the fact that Bitsko is coming off a nice outing, I think I would definitely, I would suggest grabbing him as a flyer, especially in deeper leagues, because he does have ace level upside, even if he's just, you know, still a 10 out of 10 risk wise. Ulysses wants to know the long-term outlook for Michael Massey, who's a second baseman in the Royal system. He's up at AAA now. Yeah, I mean, Massey's a big lift and pull guy. It's working well for him right now. I'd always been a bigger Nick Lofton guy in that system, because I thought Lofton had the better hit tool. He probably still does. And I thought Lofton had more defensive versatility, a chance to be a threat on the bases. He still has those edges over Massey, but Massey's getting to the game power right now, and he's the one at AAA. Lofton's still at AA, I believe. It's still a little crowded there in Kansas City. They seem to just have a few too many guys, even though, you know, we don't expect all those guys to be good. But for a second baseman like that, you know, you kind of need to have that clear path in there. So I don't know if that happens this year. Maybe gets a look in big league spring training, and maybe gets that shot sometime next season. But there's a thin margin for error with a guy like Massey, where it's, you know, it's second base. He doesn't really work the count a ton. So he really needs to hit for a decent average, get to that power in games. So I wouldn't go overboard on Massey, even though he is performing well as an older player at AAA. Ulysses also wanted to know about Esteri Ruiz, and does he get the call? If so, how do his video game numbers translate to MLB pitching? I mean, it's a big unknown. I mean, I think he will get the call. The Padres, I wouldn't expect them to just leave him at AAA all summer. But it's really tough to say how he's going to translate against MLB pitching, because, I mean, he's in the PCL right now. I do think that he is extremely interesting just because of the game we play, the 5x5 roto game specifically. Like in points leagues, he's much less interesting. But he does have the potential to be a 40 plus steal guy in the majors, and maybe even steal more bases than that. So, I mean, I think he's just such a tough guy to rank, because I don't think any ranker feels that confident that he's going to be a, like, I would probably take the under on him being like a true league average hitter in his first full season in the big leagues. But as long as he's playing every day, and I think he's been good enough this year where he probably gets a chance to play every day for them, then the steals will add up, and he's not a zero power guy. So I think he gets the call this season, and the speed should at least translate. Beerbot wants to know how many starts do we need to see before Forrest Whitley gets a big push up the rankings? He notes that he looked good in his last outing. You know, I can't wait to push Forrest Whitley back up the rankings. Really great to see him come back like this. I think on a few episodes ago, maybe couple months ago, I kind of compared Whitley to maybe the pitching version of Royce Lewis before Royce Lewis had the other injury. where it just like, who knows what we're going to get from this guy in terms of performance this season, but he still has the ceiling is still there. And so if Whitley just keeps stacking good starts, I mean, he's got another, you know, 4 weeks before I submit the next big update to the top 400 rankings. Like if he just keeps stacking good starts, you're going to see Whitley pretty high, because I've always just been enamored with Whitley's upside. So yeah, I mean, he's a guy that actually might be out there in some dynasty leagues. So you might want to scoop him up. Aaron, who I play in a couple dynasty leagues with, wanted to know if Dominic Fletcher for Arizona is someone on my radar. He should be on everyone's radar just based on the performance this year at AA and AAA, but I still think there's some significant quad A risk with Dom Fletcher. And I think he's a great sort of test case for discussing the hitter friendly conditions that Diamondbacks hitting prospects play in the upper levels. Someone on Twitter brought this up to me and was kind of arguing passionately that, you know, we should dial back the excitement about Corbin Carroll because he plays in Amarillo, which is an extremely hitter friendly park. And Corbin Carroll has those home road splits. But I think Dom Fletcher is much more the type of prospect where you start weighing those conditions, those hitter-friendly conditions, because he was not a guy like Dom Fletcher was not ranked coming into the year. He's older. He did not have a long track record of being this type of hitter. I mean, he'd been kind of league average. Like he'd done some things, but when a guy like that sort of pops up and is putting up these massive numbers with significant home road splits, and they play in a park like Amarillo when he was at AA and now he's in the PCL. Just a lot of kind of indicators to me of a potential quad A guy. So, you know, he's probably going to be ranked on the next update. Top 20 prospect in the Diamondback system, I think. Probably someone who gets a shot here at some point, but again, they've kind of got a crowded outfield situation. Like I think Jake McCarthy deserves a shot, like another shot. They have a lot of guys. They have a lot of mouths to feed there. Corbin Carroll obviously is going to be the long-term center fielder. Alec Thomas is obviously locked in there. They're going to need to have a spot for Dalton Varsha when he's not catching. So it's pretty crowded for Fletcher. Joey Day Clerk wants to know if Colin Barber in the Astros system is going to be moving up the rankings, and he wants to know like how I view him. I didn't do this on purpose, but another one where we should look at the home park. Basically every hitter at high A for the Astros that I can remember kind of coming across this year has video game numbers. And that's because they play their home games in Asheville. And Colin Barber has a 685 OPS on the road. And this isn't, you know, he's not a pop-up guy. Like Colin Barber has been on the top 400 in the past. He's someone I've rostered in dynasty leagues in the past. I mean, the tools are legit, good pedigree and everything like that. So he's a prospect for sure. He's not a guy who like this year, what he's doing thanks to Asheville has him just shooting up the rankings or anything like that though. Alex Hoffman wanted to know about Seydon Rafaela with the Red Sox. What do I view his future as and how much will he move up the rankings? Rafaela is a tough guy. I'm kind of on the fence. I mean, he's earned being a top 100 prospect at this point, certainly. But he's got the super low walk rates, really aggressive approach. But on the other hand, he's athletic. He's got bat speed. He's got a knack for barreling the ball. Could provide defensive value up the middle. So he checks a lot of boxes, but I do kind of, when I watch video of him, I do sort of see just a very aggressive hitter, and sometimes that translates. I mean, he has the bat speed you'd want for that type of profile. Sometimes it just leads to a guy really falling flat in the upper levels, like AAA, big leagues, that type of thing. So he's a guy that I'd probably be trying to sell high on at some point this season. Maybe you just let him kind of keep building up those AA numbers and then you sell high. But if someone's willing to value Rafaela as like a top 30 prospect or anything like that, I'd probably cash him out. Just because I'm not sold on the approach. But I mean, he's a top 100 prospect for sure. Alex also wanted to know, who are two or three other prospect evaluators you trust the most and dynasty players should follow? That's a very, you know, there's a lot. There's many more than two or three. I love chatting, like offline, like texting with, you know, like Jeff Ponce, Baseball America, Dylan White of Prospects Live, Jesse Roach at Baseball Prospectus. I think those guys do a really good job of kind of combining the eye test and the stats, and they've got really good takes on things. Also, you know, you should be listening to Chris Welsh's Prospect One podcast. It's probably my favorite prospect podcast to listen to. Actually, it's the only one I listen to with any regularity. Mike Sheets, who ran away with Tout Wars Draft and Hold my first year in Tout Wars, wants to know if I'm still as high on Brian Rocchio with the Guardians as I was before the season. I'm probably going to be pretty stubborn on Rocchio. I know, like, I've had, you know, dozens of people probably ask me, you know, is he a faller? Is he someone that you should drop for this guy or that guy? Like, you know, you can do whatever you want. Like, if you're not buying Rocchio, then I'm not going to say you have to hold him. I don't think he'll move outside the top 50 on the next update. I still don't really see any major red flags. You know, he's actually like he obviously was great last year at AA. He's back at AA. He's 21 years old. He's 4 months younger than Seydan Rafaela, who just got the bump up to AA. So, like, he was so far ahead of schedule after last season. I just don't think there's not enough here to me to really react in a major way. Obviously, his trade value is probably down quite a bit, but I would be, he's another guy. Him and Nick York, I'm going to be pretty stubborn on. I would be trying to buy low on those guys. Artur Dominguez wants to know when I expect Uri Perez and Daniel Espino to get called up. He threw out spring 2023, and then what's my long-term outlooks for them? Yeah, I mean, I think spring 2023 is very pinpoint in terms of if they're both healthy. I think that's absolutely in play. Espino, I think, has the better pure stuff, but I also kind of get more injury risk vibes from him. But I mean, with either guy, like, if you're thinking about trading them, if you're thinking about trading for them, just kind of assume that they're gonna have Tommy John surgery at some point in the next 5 years. If they don't, then great, like, you dodged a major bullet. But like, I would just kind of assume that that's gonna happen, and you probably miss about 2 years worth of production from that. I also assume that they're both going to be really awesome. I don't see a ton of performance risk there with those guys, with Perez and Espino. But I mean, now is not the time to go trading for those guys. I've heard of some trades you guys have made for those guys, and they're overpays. You're paying for something that you're kind of dreaming about happening, like a kind of a fairy tale situation with those guys. And that could happen for a time, but I mean, like, you shouldn't be trading like Jordan Walker or Jordan Lawler for those guys. Matt M. Fest wanted to piggyback off the Espino question and asked what range of prospect bat you would move him for. I think you got to aim high, and I think you got to wait until Espino is back in game action. He's still coming back from that knee issue. You know, I think I would aim as high. Like I've heard of people trading like Jordan Walker for Eury Pérez. So I would go after the, you know, Jordan Lawler, Jordan Walker, Miguel Vargas, Jackson Churio. Can you get the number one first year player draft pick for Espino and take Drew Jones? Can you get Ellie De La Cruz? I would probably rather roll the dice on Ellie De La Cruz. But like if you can't get just a blue chip guy you're super excited about, I think you hold. At some point you'll be able to get something like that, and unless, you know, blow out their elbow. But I wouldn't just trade him just to trade him because he's a pitcher. I mean, you gotta hold out for what they're worth. Matt wants to know if Davison De Los Santos with the Diamondbacks has passed guys like James Wood, Triantos, Kevin Alcantara. He's passed Triantos, but I don't think he's passed Wood or Alcantara. I think those guys are all really good, and I think Wood and Alcantara have more well-rounded skill sets with similar power potential. Ross Redk, is there something going on with James Triantos' swing that is preventing him from hitting for power? Or is it a park thing? He cites Myrtle Beach being a tough place to hit. It is. I mean, I think you can look at the swing. He's using the whole field, and he's only hitting 25% fly balls. So that's just not a recipe for much game power when you're a 19-year-old. If you're, you know, Triantos could compromise his hit tool and just try to pull and lift everything, and he'd have way more than two home runs right now, but that might have actually hurt his prospect value because the hit tool might not look as good. So I think the power will come for Triantos. Toolsy asked about Ricky Tiedemann. Am I expecting his rise to continue? Am I pushing him up my rankings? I'd go back and I'd listen to that Toolshed podcast I did with Eric Cross and Chris Welsh from a couple weeks ago. You should be able to find that if you search for that on Twitter. I on that podcast, I basically said, and I think I tweeted out afterwards, I think Tiedemann's basically a top 10 pitching prospect at this point. He's trending way up. I mean, he's the lefty version, you know, kind of following in the Espino, Eury Pérez footsteps, you know. I mean, it's that similar type of upside. Toolsy also wanted to know, is it time to cut Akil Baddoo in a 16-team dynasty where about 10 prospects are owned per team? Yeah, I think that's totally fine. I mean, you don't have to cut Akil Baddoo, but if you cut Akil Baddoo and I was in that league, I wouldn't rush out to pick him up. All right, let's head to a quick message from our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All Okay, Dan wants to know if I still, or he says he still feels like we're not talking enough about Esturi Ruiz and Gunnar Henderson and what's keeping them out of the top 10. Well, those are probably the two most talked about prospects that I see people talking about on my Twitter feed, and maybe with the exception of like Vinny Pascantino. So I don't know if I buy the premise that they're not being discussed enough, but the only thing keeping Gunnar Henderson out of the top 10 is I haven't updated my rankings yet. He's a easy top 10 guy for me at this point. Maybe even top 5. With Esturi Ruiz, kind of touched on him a little earlier, but he's more kind of like a borderline top 10 guy. I compared him to Jonathan Villar on last week's pod, and that's, you know, for good and for ill. Like Villar had a season where he's a top 10 fantasy player. Ruiz could easily have a season where he's a top 10 fantasy player, but I don't think it's a slight to take a guy like Ruiz, who was unranked coming into the year, and say he's just a borderline top 10 guy at this point after less than 3 months. Robert Mershak, a friend of the show, co-manages some teams with my old partner, Ian Kahn. He wants to know how I look at older prospects such as David Villar with the Giants and JJ Mattijevic with the Astros when trying to find the next Max Muncy type without much prospect pedigree. This is kind of a dark art that is very imprecise and very difficult to sort of pinpoint, like finding the next Max Muncy. You're going to be wrong more than you're right. I think the main things you're looking for are just extreme plate skills. You want the walk rate to be, over 12%, probably. You want the strikeout rate to be under 20%. So you want them to just have total command of the count or of the at-bat, I should say. And you can look back at Max Muncy's numbers in the upper levels, and that's right there. You also want the hard hit data should be off the charts, I think, especially if they're at AAA. So that, to me, that kind of rules out Mattijevic. VR is a bit more interesting. He'd be more interesting, I think, if he were traded, because he's a right-handed hitter. So you got to worry about him being short side platooned with the Giants, at least early on. He's also got a 28% K rate and he's 25 years old. So, you kind of almost want, now Vinny Pascantino isn't a Max Muncy type, cause he's been someone that people have been talking about for a while now. People were awaiting his debut. I don't think anyone was awaiting Max Muncy's big league debut, but you want the plate skills to be about as good as what Pascantino had. You can maybe have a higher strikeout rate, but, and then we have the RotoWire hard hit data for prospects. I'd go check that out under batted ball stats, I think, under prospects. And you want that hard hit rate to be nice and green, mid 30s. John Dobos. CJ Abrams, are we worried about his MLB at bats, or is he just adjusting to MLB? The latter, not worried about CJ Abrams. Marco Luciano, is he going to get promoted to AA soon? He hasn't played in about a month with a back strain, so nothing really to see there. And he wants to know if I'm still high on Pedro Leon. Possible ETA. I think I'm vindicated on my power speed projection on Pedro Leon, but the hit tool hasn't really come along the way I hoped, and I don't really see them throwing him to the wolves this year, just given I think he'd fall flat. So I think the path with Leon is you hope that he makes a ton of noise in big league spring training next year. And maybe then we sort of see a path to him joining that lineup. But the Astros might also kind of tell us, you know, how much he's in the plans based on any roster moves they make and whether center field is open for him. The last question from John is, Caleb Killian, Chase Silseth, Reed Detmers, are we holding or dropping in Dynasty? I'd honestly like to hold all three. All of this always depends on like what quality of guy are you picking up for them. Eno and I have Silseth in Devil's Rejects Dynasty. We haven't dropped him yet. We've been close to dropping him a couple times. I am not quitting Reed Detmers at all in Dynasty. I just think there's no explanation to me. I mean, maybe it was like a spider tech type of thing, but there's no reason that his off-speed stuff can't get back to where it was last year. I mean, I think that's the main thing holding him back. And, you know, for as kind of up and down and mostly down it was this year for Detmers, I mean, there's still some positives to take away. I mean, he had a whip that was way better than league average, which is pretty hard to do when you're missing as few bats as he was. So I think Detmers, you know, we want to keep tabs on him next year in spring training, maybe even later this season, see how the stuff looks. But yeah, I'm definitely holding Detmers. And then Killian, I think he's in just such a good situation that Cubs rotation, it's going to be wide open for him. Still a great division to pitch in. He just hasn't looked as good as he did last year. And that's just been the case all season long, even when he had really good numbers in the minors before these blowups in the big leagues. And he's been kind of thrown to the wolves a little bit in the big leagues in some of those starts where I think one of them was like 90 plus degrees, the wind blowing out in Wrigley. And like there was, you know, another like I think pretty tough matchup, if I recall. So Killian, I don't think he's as bad as his big league numbers, but he also hasn't pitched as well and hasn't looked as good as he did towards the end of last season. Dan, do you have any good source for monitoring injuries in minor league baseball? And then he mentions Corbin Carroll. You want to check on their MILB.com page, see if they're actually on the IL, which Corbin Carroll is. I usually do a bunch of Twitter searches and message people I know connected with the teams to try to figure out what the injury is, but couldn't even track anything down on Corbin Carroll. He's been on the IL for like 3 or 4 days, and there's nothing out there on why he's on the IL, and he's the number one prospect in baseball. So that tells you right there how hard it is to track down injuries for minor leaguers. You might see, MLB.com does a bunch of good articles at the very, at the end of spring training where they say which prospects are going to open the year on the IL. Baseball America did a really good article about a month ago. I think that was Kyle Glazer, just going org by org and, you know, saying which guys are hurt, which guys aren't. So that stuff's always useful, but when it's just a random thing and there's no sort of article attached to it, sometimes you just never find out. Like Luis Matos was on the IL for, or just stopped playing for a long time. We could never really figure it out for at least a few weeks. M-Fest, let's see. He wants to know about Brennan Davis. Like if you were already questioning the hit tool and he's hurt, can you give a few reasonable examples of prospects you would try to flip him for? This is just not a good scenario to be trying to trade Brennan Davis of the Cubs. He's basically damaged goods at this point. You're not going to get anywhere close to fair value for him from like a talent standpoint, given the fact that he's got a significant injury and he performed poorly before that. So I'd recommend holding. If you're dead set on cashing him out and just getting what you can for him right now, maybe try for like a Curtis Mead or a Spencer Steer type, but I think you you really gotta hold him. I think that's the way to go there, because he could rebound pretty easily. Like if we don't know how much that injury was affecting the play. We could get to spring training next year, and he could be the talk of Cubs camp, and then the value's way back up. So I wouldn't want to trade him right now. Matt Sebron wants to know my thoughts on Will Benson, the Guardians, former top 100 prospect, I believe, and certainly a guy that had a lot of ups and downs on the top 100. I bet if you looked at his chart on his RotoWire page, it'd be pretty funny. He notes the massive drop in K rate and the fact he's still walking a lot with the power and the speed. Can things just click for prospects like this that were drafted out of high school? Yeah, absolutely. His org mate, Oscar Gonzalez, for instance, had been ranked for about as long as Benson. They both kind of went up and down, and both fell off the rankings. Now Gonzalez is actualizing those tools that made him so appealing in the first place, and Benson just turned 24, so I'm pretty intrigued at what Benson's doing. I mean, he was a guy that I always wanted to believe in. I mean, the swing and miss had always been there, but like Matt cites, I think it's like 22% K rate for Benson right now at AAA. All right, Ross Redk again, a couple of guys kind of flying under the radar. He said Eric Longenhagen at Fangraphs had a glowing report on Brandon Fatt, and said it sounds like stuff is ticked up, is a bad home park hiding a rising arm. And then he said the other one is Ian Lewis, super loud tools. What is keeping the industry from moving this guy up lists? I've moved Lewis up a little bit before the last update. I love him. I think he's great. That last update, I think, was right after he returned to game action after missing the start of the year. I don't know if I would say Lewis has super loud tools. I would say he's just a really good athlete with a chance to develop super loud tools. And then Fat has been on a roll lately. I don't think you have to look that much under the behind the curtain to see that he's having a good season. I mean, the fielding independent stats are really great. It's a lot less confusing with him than with like Dre Jameson and Ryan Nelson, who are at AAA. But yeah, I think Fat's definitely trending up. I would say he's definitely top 200 prospect, you know, maybe top 150. And then Lewis is probably still just outside the top 100. I mean, he's a ways away. We're still projecting some stuff, especially in the power department. AJ asks, in a save plus hold league, how much does that devalue closers? Does it impact elite closers? I think it makes it just so that you're basically trying to roster the best reliever you can, whether or not they're getting saves or not. And it makes the closers with mediocre ratios much less valuable, like your Gregory Soto's or like Corey Knable back before he lost that job. Those guys are much less valuable, and then the setup men with elite ratios are much more valuable. So you're basically just trying to, like, if I were ranking relievers for a league like that, I'd basically just rank them based on who I think the best relievers in baseball are. Ethan Sexton asked, he said, I was super high on Royce Lewis pre-injury as he flew up your rankings. Do you still feel pretty strong about him going forward, or did the injury do anything to dampen his ascent? I've thought a lot about Royce Lewis and just how to kind of value him. I think I fully believe in the talent still. I believe he will make it all the way back. Like, I don't think this is a career ender. The big fear I have with Lewis is just, is he going to re-injure it? Like, once he makes it back, like, are we going to be, you know, Lewis is back to the big leagues. It's a great story next summer, maybe like a, you know, August or something. And everyone's all excited. And then like 3 weeks later, does he, you know, re-injure it? Because the play he injured it on, it just wasn't the type of play where you would have expected a knee injury. So He's really tough to kind of figure out. On last week's pod, it was the Highlander underdog keeper pod, and I mentioned how like Lewis was just locked into being my underdog there. It's basically got to be a guy he took in the 13th round of the startup or later. And I just couldn't pull the trigger on it because I would have been locked into him for 3 years after this. But I mean, I believe in the talent. I just think there's a ton of risk there for re-injury. So just got to be careful. Ira Aronin says, do I think the odds are good Miguel Vargas and or Michael Busch will be packaged in a trade before the deadline? The Dodgers have chosen not to bring Vargas up and get him experience for late season and playoffs. I mean, there's 3 months left in the season. They could still bring him up. I do not think the Dodgers are going to trade Miguel Vargas. They do not trade prospects as good as Miguel Vargas. You know, if you look at like the best players the Dodgers have traded are Yordan Alvarez and O'Neill Cruz. And they traded those guys when they were teenagers who were massive, and probably any statistical model would tell you the odds of those guys becoming good big leaguers was really small. So Miguel Vargas, a guy with a hit tool like that, who plays the infield and is basically big league ready, like that's just not a guy the Dodgers are trading. Maybe they trade Busch. At some point, you do kind of run out of spots for these guys. So maybe they trade Busch. But again, like, what are they trading for? Like, they maybe need help in the bullpen. Maybe they try to get one of the Reds starters or something like that. And, you know, in that case, if they're going after, like, Luis Castillo or Frankie Montas, I could see Busch being involved, but I don't think Vargas is going anywhere. I'm actually very confident in that. And, you know, it would have to be someone would have to be getting traded that we have no idea is on the block right now for Vargas to be involved. And I think we do see Vargas at some point in the second half of the season. Pancake Pending asks who I'm stashing at the complex league level. You know, I've got Junior Caminero with the Rays in a bunch of leagues. Still have Victor Acosta and Samuel Zavala in a few leagues. I think Gabriel Gonzalez with the Mariners has been pretty impressive this year. The problem with complex stuff right now is it's just, you know, there's a lot of really handy leaderboards you can look at on Fangraphs. If you need me to point you in the direction of those, just hit me up, direct message me or something. But, you know, you can see who's doing the best in these complex leagues, and you can like filter out by like, I'd recommend kind of eliminating the 19-year-olds. I'd recommend bypassing the guys that are striking out a ton and like not walking at all. But you can get a nice like list of guys who are just putting up crazy numbers in the complex leagues, but there's still such a small sample that I could run that same search a week from now, and half those guys that were looking really good are not going to look as good. So you really kind of got to be just churning if you're going after the guys that didn't have the pedigree coming into the year. Jason Erb says, do we anticipate any of these prospects coming off the shortstop position once in the majors? I've gone talent first, but if they all stick at shortstop, I'm in trouble. O'Neill Cruz, Anthony Volpe, Jordan Lawler. I think those guys all stick at shortstop. I've always thought Lawler would be a great center fielder, but he's not going to play there for Arizona. And then he said Jackson Trujillo or Elvis Martinez, Khalil Watson, Abdel Amador. Jackson Trujillo is already playing center field, so you don't have to worry about him. Or Elvis Martinez is, to me, a third baseman all the way, so I don't think you got to worry about him. Khalil Watson's a shortstop all the way, but I'd be more worried about just his performance as a hitter than where he ends up defensively. And then Amador, you know, Amador is not going to unseat Ezequiel Tovar at shortstop, so I think he probably would end up somewhere else. So I think you got shortstops and Cruz, Volpe, and Lawler. If that's a problem for you, then maybe you trade one of them. But I would not. I have so much FOMO right now on O'Neill Cruz. I would not trade him. I mean, it'd have to be a Godfather offer. Lawler, I wouldn't trade either. So maybe Volpe. All right, Gabriel Garcia. Actually, got a couple of Jordan Walker questions. So Gabriel Garcia says, with Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt locked in, does Jordan Walker profile a move to right field or more of a DH? And then he asks if I'm optimistic he gets to his game power. Very optimistic he gets to his game power. Guys like that don't not get to their game power unless they're Eric Hosmer. He could totally play right field. I mean, he's kind of tailor-made for right field. And yeah, I just wouldn't worry about that at all. He's a blue chipper. They'll find a spot. It won't be third base, I don't think. You know, I do think Arenado is kind of locked in there. But DH, right field, I mean, they'll find a spot for him. It might be annoying. I mean, it could be like a Kyle Tucker type of thing where he's just not up when everyone thinks he's ready, but I just wouldn't worry about that. Jordan Walker's a total stud. And then Robert Goldman said he knows I'm high on Jordan Walker, but do you not expect him until next year and then only upon injury? Yeah, I mean, Jordan Walker is not coming up this year. I don't think that should be the expectation at all, but I think he'll, whenever he is up, probably sometime next year, he'll be up for good. All right, Jay Daniel said, I just released Ji-Hwan Bae with the Pirates in a roster crunch. It's a competitive 12-team NL-only league. Should I pick him back up and release Cal Mitchell? We only have two minor league slots. That's a tough call. They're both kind of blocked right now. Bae's been on fire. Just very different types of hitters. Like Bae is kind of a John Birdie type where it's just you're hoping for batting average, runs, and speed. Mitchell, I think, could be the whole package, but obviously he didn't do much in the majors. So there's a lot of outfielders getting a shot in Pittsburgh right now. I'd probably let, you know, do you need an outfielder more? Do you need a infielder more? That's probably how I would make that decision. Derek McIntyre says, word is that Wilman Diaz is not progressing the way people had hoped while Rain Doncon is gaining helium. What are your thoughts on these two Dodger Complex League prospects and who would you prefer at this stage? I'd take Doncon at this point. That's D-O-N-C-O-N. Diaz, yeah, he just been a slow start. I mean, I'd want to be patient with him. Like if I had Diaz in a dynasty league, I wouldn't be, you know, just dropping him and grabbing some guy that's really performing well, unless it's just a really shallow league. But yeah, if I had to choose between those two, I'd probably take Doncon. Music Miles, what do you think about the opportunity for Yosvar Zuleta to be a quick riser in the Jays system? There's a need for more arms at the major league level, and Zuleta might be good enough to take on at least a multi-inning relief role. Well, we're going to find out pretty soon. I mean, he just got bumped up to double A. I don't think it'd be crazy if he was up this year. I mean, that'd be quite an ascent. I think he opened at low A, so that'd be crazy to go low A, high A, double A, triple A, big leagues. But I think he's 24, so that wouldn't be crazy. I did want to mention, like, I'm pretty interested in Max Castillo right now with the Blue Jays. He's someone that I've scooped up in a lot of leagues. He made the Brewers look really silly the other day in long relief, and he was a starter in the minors. So I think he's a nice kind of under-the-radar ad in Dynasty Leagues right now. Although he did, part of the reason he made the Brewers look bad is he got to face Keston Hira a couple times, but did not go well for Keston. Castillo's got a really nice changeup, and he's got an okay slider. A lot of good movement on the fastball, mid-90s fastball. Cody Martin wants to know what my outlook is for Alejandro Ozuna with the Rangers. He asks if he is a potential top 100 guy if he keeps producing. So I haven't seen Ozuna yet this year, but from what I understand, he, like, the stats make him look like this power speed outfielder. From what I understand, he's not really. It's more just kind of about the hit tool. And you can't overreact to those low A stolen base totals. So I think he's more of a guy that debuts around like 250 on the top 400. Levi Palmer wanted to know if Christian Robinson is still a hold. I mean, he was never a must hold for me. I think he's just a total wild card. I mean, everyone handles this stuff differently. If you just want a boom or bust type of guy like that, I mean, he's fine. I guess you could still hold him. He's no longer getting to play in extended spring though, because that's over. So, and he's not allowed to play in games where people can pay to go to the games. So I'd read the note on our site on him, and I think the article that's linked there from Nick Pecoro, but just a total wild card, Christian Robinson. Like, if there's a good prospect out there who's performing that you want to grab and Robinson's your best drop, I wouldn't hold back on that. Goods 5119 says third base is absurdly shallow at the bigs and at the prospect level, and I've been chasing it for years in Dynasty. He wants to know if Brett Beatty, Mark Vientos, or Ellie De La Cruz would be my priority. And then secondly, which shortstop prospects are likely to move to third base before getting to the bigs? I would rank those De La Cruz, Beatty, Vientos. De La Cruz, not a lock to move to third, but probably. He's already playing some third, so that's usually where a guy ends up if they're not playing every day at shortstop anymore. So yeah, De La Cruz, Beatty, Vientos, you know, in terms of guys that are currently shortstops who might move to third base, you know, the Toronto guys like Elvis Martinez, Jordan Groshans, although he might be more second base, Brady House maybe, although that's probably 50-50. Gunnar Henderson might at least qualify at third base. He might not play third base exclusively, but he might qualify there. Noel V. Marte comes to mind. I mean, Gunnar Henderson, good luck trying to trade for him right now, but you know, you might be able to buy low on Josh Jung with the Rangers, or Zach Gelof for the A's, since they're both hurt. I like those guys a lot, and they're definitely third basemen. Matt Mountain, what do you make of Caleb Killian's initial MLB appearances? Would you cut him? He's an NL only with 7 minor spots. Would you cut him for someone in the Mason Wynn, Vaughn Grissom, Brandon Williamson, Gordon Graceffo tier? I'd definitely cut him for Wynn. I'd take Mason Wynn over him for sure. Mason Wynn's probably top 50 prospect at least. And then I'd probably take Vaughn Grissom over Caleb Killian. But you know, there's issues with Killian, as I touched on earlier, but Brandon Williamson and Graceffo, like, they're not just like surefire studs. So I think I'd hold Killian over those guys. Kale Loken said, are Nick Nastrini and Jose Ramos big movers for you on your next update? We'll see. I mean, Nastrini, he's probably going to make a half dozen more starts before my next update. So we'll see if he's dialed back the walks. I mean, he's missing bats at a pretty crazy clip right now, though, but he's pretty old for his level. And then Jose Ramos is just kind of doing what he does. I mean, the strikeouts are still there. Power's still there. I think he might move up a little bit, but I don't think he's going to move up a ton. Then last question from Bobby Baseball. Cardinals prospect Moises Gomez destroyed AA. He just moved up to AAA. Is he interesting for Dynasty or was it a mirage? I mean, to me, it's, you know, it's Quad A City with Moises Gomez, but there's something about what the Cardinals are doing right now. I need to have a Cardinals prospects expert on the show, but they just have a ton of guys. Like, everyone in their system is just performing like crazy this year. It's almost like it's something you'd kind of expect from like the Giants or the Dodgers or something, but the Cardinals, it seems like every hitter they have is producing. And, you know, even like Nolan Gorman, the super high strikeout rate, but he's producing. So I don't want to say like Gomez is just, it's a total mirage, because, you know, maybe there's something that's clicking there that I just can't really see in the numbers or in the, just the video that I've access to, but I think it's much more likely than not that it's just a mirage. And then the other issue is just, where's this guy going to play? Like the Cardinal, we just talked about, where's Jordan Walker going to play? You know, Moises Gomez isn't, if Jordan Walker doesn't have anywhere to play, Moises Gomez definitely doesn't have anywhere to play. And they still have like four big league outfielders. I think Lars Nootbaar is interesting. So I don't think there's anywhere for him to play. So we might never find out if it was a mirage or not. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of the Wednesday mailbag episode of June. And I'll be back with you next week with a guest. Thanks for tuning in.